Well, I'm not sure why they had me to come. Maybe because I had more children than anyone they knew. There are seven of us. We were kind of in the preacher's business over the years. Three of the sons were married to preachers, and three of the daughters of the 10 children were preachers' wives. So we've kind of been in that for a long time. Today we want to talk to you about training children. I'm going to choose, because of my kidney stone situation lately, or not kidney stone, gallbladder being removed, so I'm probably just going to read most of this instead of trying to express too much. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Psalm 127, verse 3. Indeed, children are precious gifts from God. They're wonderful blessings, bring so much love and happiness into our lives. However, attending these blessings, we know, are responsibilities that God has given to parents. Parents accept one of the greatest challenges in life when they bring children into this world. The good news is that parents do not have to face such momentous undertaking, such a momentous undertaking alone. Because in the Bible, God gives parents all the information they need on how to rear children for this life and the hereafter. And if children are truly the blessings that we say they are, let's show the Lord how thankful we are by bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Ephesians 6:4. Thus preparing them as fit subjects for service in his vineyard. A worthy example to follow. God sent Jesus into the world not only to redeem us, but also to show us how to live. The steps of Jesus lead us in the way of abundant living. In John chapter 10, verse 10, I have come, Jesus said, that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. Parents need to understand and use the unique opportunity that is theirs. We are our children's first heroes and role models. And they exert great influence during those early impressionable years in God's treatment of his children. He has a perfect example we have a perfect example to follow. Carefully consider that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no shadow of turning. James 1:17. Obviously, the study of parental responsibility is badly needed today. Many congregations are losing a number of their teenagers to the world. We do have, of course, some of as fine and faithful young Christians as ever. However, it's sad to see many who have finished their college work but are not now faithful to the Lord. That has been something that has really been impressed upon my mind, that had been outstanding Bible students, but after they focused on career, that's the big word, career, and they have turned away from the Lord's cause in some places. I think you've observed the same thing. So it is that parents need to show the zeal that they show toward secular education. They want the best teachers they can get, and they want the best facilities and learning environment possible for their work. But my question is, do these parents show the same zeal and fervency for their children's spiritual development? Christian parents need to pause and ponder just what life they're trying to prepare their children for, this life or the one to come. Instruction in righteousness. Righteousness, according to Vine's Expository Dictionary, is the character or quality of being right and just. In the inspired scriptures, God has given us instruction in righteousness. All Scripture is given by the inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. Christian parents should view it as a privilege to teach their own children in the righteous way of God. God gives fathers the leading role in this instruction. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Ephesians 6, 4. Now, mothers certainly have a very significant role also. They also need to be teaching and encouraging them to follow God's will in a supportive role to the faithful father. God entrusted these little ones for a short time to parents that they might help mold their hearts for heaven. And so parents should strive for the impartiality that is shown by God in regard to all of us. I know that it's not easy for people to rear children for the Lord. It really never has been and never will be easy. So let us realize that those who desire the blessings that children bring carefully need to consider whether they are willing to accept the responsibilities of parenthood. This is so important because precious souls are at stake, our own and the souls of our children. Where are their parents? Is the question. We live in an age of absentee parents. The latest surveys tell us that the so-called traditional home with a father and a mother and siblings together is now 1 in 4 currently. And people are concerned about abuse, all right, but they're not concerned about the greatest abuse. And that is spiritual neglect. They want to be sure, as I said, that they get all of these other trainings. Little children had no choice in being born in this old sinful world. Surely they should have the opportunity to know the Lord's way and the happiness it brings. If they later forsake their training, they will answer for themselves, but they are entrusted to us. And we have a wonderful opportunity to mold their hearts for eternity. We must not neglect this stewardship. Moreover, it is required in stewards, Paul writes, that one be found faithful. The cost of failing to train our children. The Lord's church loses a great deal when children are not trained to serve Him. They make up the next generation of saints. The future of God's faithful people will be greatly damaged when it's not done. Over the coming decades, faithful congregations will diminish in numbers of active members. The funds to do the work and the faith to continue to press on for heaven and to teach their children to do the same. Parents can be forgiven for neglecting their children's spiritual training, but the consequences of their failing in this area will plague their hearts continually. God plans good marriages to be a stable environment for raising godly children. Sadly, too many Christians today are raising, our children today are raising themselves and almost always fail miserably. Important principles for rearing children. Parents early on need to spend the time necessary to build a close, loving relationship with their children. That's one of the problems. They're not together enough. And they come in the evening, they fly in, the son has this sport, the daughter has this, and that old time when we sat down together around the table is just not there very much anymore. And therefore, they don't have an opportunity to air the feelings and to really get close to one another and to be supportive of one another. And so it is that we must focus upon our children. We brought them into the world. We will answer for this responsibility. So they should spend a great deal of time, as we shall emphasize further. This is essential to establishing a good emotional atmosphere whereby both the parents and the children can respect and listen to one another. One of the big complaints of a lot of teenagers, nobody wants to listen to me. We can't afford to wait too long because we will rob parents of their ability to effectively train their children in God's righteous ways. This is very important because parents are their children's first heroes, and the door is open wide to their hearts. The important principle of rearing children I want to stress further by suggesting the urgency of getting there early. We can't wait till they're 13 years old. We're not going to be very successful if we do that. We hope to succeed on that basis. This is very important because, as we've said, they are our first heroes. And I remember wanting to step my dad's tracks in the old garden back home, the sandy hills of North Louisiana. I'd stretch my six-year-old legs as far as they'd go to reach his 3-foot steps. He was my hero. When we make mistakes, and we all do, we must be willing to admit them and to ask for their forgiveness. I remember there were times maybe when I was young, when I was a little hesitant to hesitate about something, about what I did or did not know about it. I thought you can't afford to admit to certain things. Then I learned you stand 8 foot tall when you own up before your children, and you score some brownie points there when they see that you're willing to admit that you're not everything that some would propose they were. The importance of genuine love. I can't overemphasize this. Our genuine love is so very important in establishing the right relationship with our children. Parents who do not have the ability to love children should not bring them into the world. Also, people who love only themselves are not fit to be parents. The Apostle Paul warns, you want to hear some perilous times and see them developing all around us? 2 Timothy 3:1. Perilous times will come, Paul says. Men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. Sounds pretty much like what we have, isn't it? Boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. It sounds like today. The sad situation in many American homes. The current divorce crisis and sexual revolutions have produced an increase of unwanted children. I remember a few years ago seeing in the paper where a couple traded a child for a car. In today's society, many parents are away from the children so much, often the children question how much their parents really love them. The Apostle Paul warned of the time when men will be without natural affection. We had a dairy farm, and when one of the cows didn't come, we realized that she had born a calf, and so my dad would send after her. And that cow would come when I would mock a dog, and they're more supportive, even animals, than a lot of people are. They'll abandon them, leave them wherever they are. At the same time, we have people who are bartering away their precious rights of parenthood for more material things. This is the mark of the degenerate society in which we live. We did some bartering years ago. You don't do it anymore. Uncle Sam's going to get his tax on it. But we traded back then in poor times milk for lunches and for the doctors and the dentists. That's the way business was carried on when I grew up, because we had a dairy farm and people didn't have a lot of money. But we don't need to be bartering away precious rights of parenthood for material things. But there's very much of it going on. And a lot of it is the fact that they're so focused on career, career, career. And I've heard them when they'd say years ago, don't have so much anymore. What is your job? Well, I'm just a homemaker, apologetically, as if that was some disgrace. If anyone has a God-given ability, it's a woman, to rear children and to bring them up in the Lord's way. Some families have their own health issues, I understand, and financial situations that require mothers to leave the home and for a time help provide the necessities of their family. However, this should be an absolute necessity before leaving her more important God-given role for which she is so uniquely qualified. Being at home when your children need mom is so much more important than pursuing any career. Don't be apologetic. Often children do not see the dangers, and thus they want things that would be so scripturally harmful for them. Good, loving parents have the courage to step up and prevent them from making serious mistakes. Just as God will not grant anyone's petitions if they would be spiritually dangerous for him. Genuine love is shown by impartial treatment. Parents are really sowing the seed for real problems by showing favoritism. I've been in homes, and I'm sure you have overheard people say, "Why aren't you like your brother? Why aren't you like your sister?" And that must cut deeply. But people need to think about that. And Isaac loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Genesis 25:28. This partiality caused real problems in that home. Parents need to avoid such hurtful, unfair comparisons between their children. To have a sense of self-worth, every child needs to feel loved and respected. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Ephesians 6:4. God's wisdom for effective discipline. Our Father in heaven loves each person enough to correct him. Children really want guidance and respect of parents who care enough to correct them. Some people think, well, they won't love me if I correct them. Actually, some have observed children doing something like pushing over a lamp or something to get some attention. They want someone to do something, to pay a little attention to them. And we need to realize that they need that attention. And they don't need just to have to come home to a television and then not have any time really to be with the family. We have so many things. The boys come in for the ball playing. The girls come in for this and that. And that'll sit down to gather around the table and air things that have been problems for us during the day. And the part of the children is just not there very much anymore. We can't afford not to be there. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Hebrews 12:6. Parents show their love by properly using discipline. Today, I believe the better job we do in the home and the church of instructive discipline, the less need there will be for corrective discipline. A child cannot live a happy, godly life without discipline, guidance, and training. Christian parents must give serious thought to Bible principles so that their training can be administered effectively. Here are some thoughts along this line as to how it can be more effective, the discipline. First, of course, that should be first in so many things, hope and pray for wisdom that it will be successful. Secondly, while out of the child's presence, let both parents discuss and agree on what action will be taken. Don't have the child involved in it to listen to all the back and forth about the situation. Here's a third one I'm suggesting because of some experience I had. Wait a day so it can be administered calmly after you and the child have time to think about it. That was one of my dad's deals. Couldn't sleep good that night. I wish he'd gone ahead then. I asked him later. He said, well, I'd be calmer. You'd have more time to think about it. And I think he had a good point. And it was administered in a cool situation. And it was effective. Didn't have to come too often. But one thing I appreciated, I knew his word was as good as he spoke it. Like Babe Ruth candy bars. So much. That was something new. I'm telling how old I am. But that's no big deal now. All kinds of candy. But if he promised me that, I've seen him turn around and go back to get it. I knew exactly where I was. He didn't know a lot of threatening. When he promised something, he would follow up on it, whether it was a licking or a blessing. What should parents do about corporal punishment? A lot of people said, no, we've outgrown that. Don't you know that doesn't work? Don't you know that's child abuse? Oh, that'll warp their personalities. I've seen some little personalities that need to be warped about that much. About corporal punishment, the scriptures clearly teach that such correction is approved by God. If we don't believe, we need to get our Bibles open. When such action is required, we should be governed by righteous principles of God's word. For example, discipline should not be administered when parents are angry. And that speaks back to the point earlier. But if administered in the proper way, it is loving and produces the fear of God. And I have scriptural support here. He who spares his son hates, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Proverbs 13:24. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Proverbs 29:15. Do we believe the scriptures? For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. Proverbs 3:11. Genuine love is shown by fathers providing the physical needs for their family. You would think that would be a given, but it is not. But if someone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever, Paul writes, 1 Timothy 5:8. How can children respect a father who will not try to provide for the physical needs of his family? Children should have the right to look to their father for guidance and support. But again, many fathers are not anywhere to be found. How can children respect a father who will not try to provide? Children should have the right to look to their father for guidance and support. It is not enough for parents to just give them money, turn them loose to do as they please, just to kind of get them out of our hair here. And so many times, young Christians, young children, want to talk about situations the parents don't have time to talk. And later, when serious mistakes are made, they just can't understand how it happened. It's not enough just to give them money. That won't answer all questions. Sometimes neither parent has the courage to speak up when children need spiritual warnings. Oh, I don't want her to be upset with me. Had we rather get hurt seriously and maybe for life? Sometimes you don't find parents that are willing to do that. But parents are not guiltless who look the other way, leaving their children to come up in a situation where they just have to experience some very, very terrible things. Loving parents have learned how to say no and stick to it when children are about to ruin their lives. I remember in one area where I lived, in Texas, where there were some people that were in the military, and there was a young lady there. She was just a young, I think 13, 14 year old, but a rather nice looking young lady. Before you know it, there were some young men that began to come and call. She was an adopted child. She was one that could not say no. Need I tell you that she was literally destroyed because the mother could not say no to her. The high priest Eli, one of the saddest examples we all remember of a father who failed to correct his wicked sons. God had warned him of the terrible consequences. Perhaps he thought, boys will be boys. But his boys grew up to be wicked men who did not know the Lord, who committed illicit acts around the place of worship, who had no regard for truth and righteousness. God said in that day, I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end, for I have told him I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them. 1 Corinthians 3:12-15. One of the saddest pages you'll ever read in your Bible. Here's this old man concerned because they thought the Ark of the Covenant could protect them from their old enemies and took it with them. And here he is, and he is old and he's heavy, and he's wondering what the result's going to be anxiously. And finally he comes back. The Ark of the Covenant's been taken. And he was an old man and heavy and fell off and broke his neck. What a terrible, terrible end for the life of this man. And so we are responsible to answer before God. We need some parents like those that Timothy had. He remembered the genuine parts about her, how she was, her grandmother Lois, her mother Eunice. And Paul said, or the writer said, I am persuaded to send you always. You talk about a pedigree. If you want to see a beautiful pedigree on the maternal side, can't say it for the father, but what a wonderful thing. How many little ladies go about quietly, not making any big fuss, writing cards, encouraging people in the way of godliness. And in the great day, I'm convinced that a lot more than we know anything about are going to hear, come ye blessed of my Father. They are people who are quietly doing, not just talking about, doing good things. And so we need to have that kind of women, godly women. The important thing here is personal conviction. That's what I want to emphasize here. Our children are not going to be able to give an answer for their hope. Peter says we're to do that. We're to be ready to give an answer to every man, asking us a reason of the hope that is in us. But unless we are aware of the truth, we're not going to be able to teach it as we should. And so if we're going to have these children to be what they ought to be, it's not enough that we generate them. It's not enough that they are our offspring. Sometimes we seem to think that surely they wouldn't do this or do that. They must have the proper knowledge and a well-regulated conscience. And that takes more than me begetting them. I'm going to have to be responsible as a father. How can we help our children to develop personal convictions? One of the great men of God who did such outstanding work, one of the greatest I've ever known, was Brother Irvin Lee. So many congregations in Alabama, for you who are aware of his work, go back to him. And he was satisfied just to serve. It didn't have to be something big. But the Lord, I'm sure, was convinced of his conviction for truth and right. Somebody says, how are we going to develop this? Teach, and teach some more, Brother Lee said. I remember in a lesson he presented, he said, we cannot teach our children a lesson for eternity on some Sunday afternoon. If it were that easy, I suppose nearly everybody would do it. We just don't want to give time. But it can't be done without time. Their parents have to be there. God was concerned about it, even under the old covenant. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. Shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. We need to discuss with our children religious convictions that they have. This needs to be done, as I said earlier, at some time, not just without any real order. At meal times, whenever we have the opportunities, just keep on teaching and teaching. Fathers, of course, or assign this responsibility, they can't say, I'm too busy. I beget them. I'm going to have to answer to God. It will be required that one give a lot of time to nurture and for the admonition of our children. Unfortunately, we allow ourselves to get too busy. How much do we think the eternal salvation of our children is worth? What goals have we set for them? They know whether we want them to go to heaven more than anything else. What do we really want most from them? Our priorities show that many are primarily concerned about physical health, secular education, social acceptance, employment, etc. We must see that time spent influencing them for good is much more important than money, status, and all the material things they might gain. We need to encourage our children in spiritual things. Positive attitude is very important. When children see their parents happily serving the Lord, it commends such a life for them. However, when comments are often critical of our brethren, and that's what a lot of kids hear from parents coming home from worship sometimes, yet there are members who say, why don't the preacher, elders, or other members do something to get my kids interested? Each of us should face up to the question, am I talking the local work, wherever I worship, up or down? Children know whether or not we want to go to heaven more than anything else. Let's not have the spineless attitude of those spies. We need to have the positive attitude of Paul, who said, I can do. Selecting a worthy mate. We certainly need to find a virtuous person that's going to help us. Charm is deceitful, beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. Proverbs 31:10-31. The choice of one's mate for life is very important. For a wife or a husband, it may have a tremendous impact on the family. Before a Christian enters a mixed marriage, Christian to a non-Christian, one should consider potential problems they will face. Is there a mutual dedication to church attendance? Do both have a commitment to give generously to the Lord? Are both determined to raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? The influence of the father is often great, and the wife may not be able to see their children become Christians. These are real problems that must be faced. Often we have seen tears coursing the cheeks over promises. I remember seeing one lady, "Oh, but Brother Hartzell, he promised me he'd come with me after we got married. Never once fulfilled it." Her heart was broken. The wise course is to choose a faithful Christian for your mate who will be able to walk arm in arm with you and your family to gain heaven for eternity. Train up a child in the way he will go, should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I agree that sometimes parents do a good job, and they want to say this is just not worth even considering. But I think when they are really grounded, that's the most common thing that's going to result from that training that child in the right way. And we need to be praying about it all along. I have just a moment. What time do we cut off here? Can you tell me? 5 more minutes? All right. I just want to mention that two nights ago, Channel 6 down in Birmingham, some of you may have seen it, Tuesday, they were honoring all of these soldiers. They were all gays and lesbians. You should have seen the crowd in there, praising them, talking about how much they were due. Our nation is floundering on complete destruction. We need to pray, and pray diligently. Let me just read, I think I have just time to read this. The change agents, go back to the courts, active Supreme Court, became the primary agent of change, 73, Roe versus Wade. 63, rule Bible reading public schools was unconstitutional. Later they ruled the Ten Commandments posted on the walls of schools rooms was unconstitutional. 77, ruled that contraceptives could be given to children without parental notification. Protest homosexuality under freedom of speech. I'm afraid some of our young preachers already beginning to feel heat on this. Humanism is taught, the Humanist Manifesto. What the humanist believes, John Duffy wrote, "I'm convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public class school classrooms by teachers who correctly perceive their role as the proselytizers of the new faith. Their success is evident by the fact that generally the more schooling a person has received, the less likely he is to have faith in God and to believe in an absolute standard, right versus wrong." That wasn't some preacher that said that. Cal Thomas, a well-known commentator, said, our public schools operate in an environment of situation ethics and moral laxity. Agents of change have been affected by the humanists, the classroom, the ACLU, the entertainment industry, the media, TV and movies. Producers push the limits of what FAA will allow. Religious people and preachers are portrayed as irreverent, impotent fanatics, while homosexuals and lesbians are being honored as they were the other night. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. You've been very kind. Precious gifts that come from God, our dear children, them we love. What a blessed privilege we have, molding hearts for Heaven above. Teach your children, love your children, train them in the
way of God. What a sweet reunion there will be in our home eternally. Fathers, you must lead the way. Daily teach and with them pray. And the mothers too, with the tender hand, kindly guide them lest they stray. Teach your children, love your children, train them in the way of God. What a sweet communion there will be in our home eternally. Sweetest home Christ has prepared, where no fear will dim our lives, and our faithful one once there shall sing grateful praise to God on high. Teach your children, love your children, train them in the way of God. What a sweet communion there will be in our home eternally.